This broadcast of the PJC Media Network seeks to present wholesome, thought-provoking, and entertaining content. However, the views expressed by the hosts of PJC Media are theirs and theirs alone. They do not reflect the views of this network or its affiliates. Please utilize listener discretion.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show.
Good evening. Good evening and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Tonight we will be discussing with our friend, Dr. Cynthia Howard, and she's going to be talking to us about the DANCE dance system of church administration and the founder of her own consulting company. So right now I'm going to introduce my co-host, Mr. Coleman. How you doing this evening?
Good, Jenny White. How are you this afternoon?
I'm fine, thank you. And right now I'm going to introduce our guest, Dr. Cynthia Howard. Dr.
Hello?
Howard, are you there? Yes.
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great.
So how are you doing?
Sorry about that. I am doing well. Wonderful. How are you doing? And the co-host, it's a pleasure to meet you over the airways.
Yes, you as well, Dr.
Okay. So my name is Dr. Cynthia Howard, and I really am a professional with 30 years of experience in coaching, consulting, mentoring, and counseling. As well, I am the owner and founder of Cynthia Howard Consultant, LLC, where I basically work with people who are tired of being or feeling mistreated, unsafe, and judged in their environment, and most especially who desire a safe place to share their feelings openly, conquering everything negative. I don't know. You tell me where to stop, Dr. Jenny, but I have experience in the corporate world. I'm a retiree of Pratt & Whitney United Technologies Corporation, which has been acquired and now is they really are under the name of Raytheon Technologies. So, but I worked there for 40 years in the capacity of HR manager over all of the different departments, the engineering department, the commercial side of the business, manufacturing operations side of the business, and the military engine side, which is where I retired from. So, have a full life. I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland. That's where I was born.
Okay.
But was really raised, moved to Connecticut, which is where I am now, in Bloomfield, Connecticut. But I moved to Connecticut at an early age when I was going into the sixth grade from Baltimore. So I consider Connecticut my home. When I travel back to Baltimore these days, I don't even recognize the city. Things have changed so much. So that's what I do. That's my passion is around the church and church administration. I am saved and very active in the church, working in the capacity as administrator to the pastor, the youth department, the church council, and I am president of the college assistant ministry where I deal with the young people. So that's what keeps me vibrant and alive and going.
Yeah, I know about that.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Basically, Jenny, my ministry and passion is just to help people from all walks of life and to understand that relationships impact every situation encountered in our life, whether it's spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, financially, and especially in the business environment. I thank God that I have been blessed spiritually as well as professionally as far as my educational background. I won't go through all my degrees, but he's blessed me to have 5 degrees, and my last one was my doctorate's degree in Christian counseling, which propelled me into my LLC. I am the wife of Eddie Howard Jr., and between us, we have raised 4 phenomenal young men. And we have 6, and we have 6 grandchildren. So that's me in a nutshell.
Well,
but to know me
great.
Is to love me.
Okay, I like that. Yeah, but I think you've done quite a bit in your time. I wouldn't dare ask you how old you are, but 40 years with your company, that's pretty good. Did they have to make you leave?
Well, actually, I don't have a problem because it's a blessing to be alive and in the land
that's
of the
true.
Living.
That's true.
Each and every day. So, yes, I am 68 years old, thank God.
Okay.
And, yeah.
68
and, years, 40
years young.
68 years young, correct.
That's
correct.
Right.
and just at the end of my career at Pratt & Whitney United Technologies, I was thinking it was the end of my life, 40 years. They offered a wonderful package, and as an HR manager, I was running around like a chicken with a head cut off trying to make sure everybody got their package and got it to legal and could make decisions in a proper time, and it dawned on me, Cynthia, you're eligible for this package too. So, and then I had an illness that happened in 2012 where I was sickened to death. And just like this last year that we've gone through with the pandemic, it made me pause. It made me look at and hit that reset button. It made me think about what I really love to do and what my passion is. And the Lord just dealt with me about that and let me know that my life wasn't ending just because I was retiring, but it was actually beginning. And it's been a phenomenal ride.
Okay. Most of the retirees I know are doing something else. I think years ago, retirees retired. And it wasn't much that they did, but nowadays they're very busy. I'm retired from special ed teaching, and now I'm a children's author. So, you know, you do what you do.
Yeah, you do what you do. And I think it's so important that when you go into retirement, you have an understanding or want to find out what your purpose is. I mean, let's just talk about it. Longevity, and as the years go on, you reflect back over your life and what you've accomplished or haven't accomplished, if you're happy, if you're not happy, and it gives you an opportunity to do what you want to do, especially with people retiring at early ages now, earlier and earlier. They want to go and do what they are passionate about. And why can't we do the same?
Yeah, that's a good idea. So let's get into this. Welcome to the dance system. That's kind of cute. I like that. I like the way you did that.
Yes. Well, really, Jenny, the dance system came to me as a result of my years of experience not only in the corporate world, but in the church world as well. So I've been a church administrator for over 20-some years. I guess it's like 25 years now. And I've experienced a lot of things in dealing with people from all walks of life. People give their life to the Lord, or they choose to follow Christ, or they want to be a Christian. and they join the church and they get active in different activities. But and leadership happens in the church as well as it does in the corporate environment. So really it's a preparation for leadership, which in corporate I did a lot of leadership development programs and things like that as well. But I found as a church administrator, many people were coming to me because they were, you know, feeling a little frustrated, a little burnt out about the things that they had to deal with as a church administrator. And had to just go through a lot of different things. For example, as church administrators and leaders, I really ask the question, are they dancing through their roles as, you know, whatever the assignment is, their duties, their expectations? Do the pressures that they are under sometime? Or I made them think, or are they really stagnant and stuck and unsure and frustrated and ready to shut down? Do they feel undervalued, in a rut, or obligated because of being in the church and what they have been asked to do as leaders in the church? And I found out, have they done these things or have they literally lost their dance? And in most cases, they have lost their dance. And I found out that one of the trainings that I've done is called the Dance System of Church Administration. And DANCE is two things. It's an acronym that spells out the word dance. The D stands for deliverance. The A is for attitude. The N is for nature of man. The C is for change. And then the E is for elevation. And I, the Lord dropped it into my spirit, and I did my research, and I did a training, a full training that I offer to pastors and church administrators, believers, to the church at large on the dance administration. So you could take the full training with all five steps. So dance, when you think about dancing, you think about movement, you think about synchronization and moving together with your movement synced and things like that. But a lot of times we find that we're not synced together, that we are off sync and that we're doing things our own way and that we're not really pulling together and doing what we're supposed to do, staying in our lane, so to speak. But we're trying to jump in everybody else's lane. So that's one piece of it. The second piece is that really the dance is a mindset, and it's a mindset that needs to be mastered if we are to affect the masses and really produce the changes that we need in this environment. I don't know about you, Jenny, and I know that you're out on the Detroit, Michigan area. I'm here in Connecticut in the Bloomfield area. But there's been really a spirit of gloom and doom, despondency, frustration, depression, oppression, anxiety, and stress that really has just permeated the earth. And where allowed utilizes the mind of people as its playground. So that's where I got dance from, really hitting on the different areas in deliverance. It's the idea of, I don't care who you are, deliverance means that you're bound by, if you need deliverance, you are bound by something. You need to be freed from something.
And I can't identify
what it is, but my first step is deliverance, and it looks at how to identify the deliverance that's needed and assess it in yourself first as an administrator and in others. The second step is attitude. How do we deal with the varying attitudes of people? You know, remember that song, who was it by? I think Patti LaBelle, I'm feeling good from my head to my feet. I need a new attitude.
Oh, yeah.
I say
all of
us at one point or another.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. We just need a new attitude. Change is the fourth step. And so I offer it as a full package, but I also make sure I provide it as individual steps. So if you feel like you can't do the full dance and remember all of the steps like we used to do back in the days. I still remember songs that I thought I had forgotten about. If you play it on the radio, the words just come right back to me, and I'm
right,
back in the day.
That's true.
Yeah.
But
so
I wanted
change.
To ask, okay, I just had
no,
a question about the spirit
okay.
of gloom and doom, the despondency, frustration, depression, oppression, anxiety, and stress
mm-hmm.
has permeated the earth. And I understand that we've had this pandemic going on for over a year. And it's just got people in, I don't know, you know, people
yeah.
had predicted that there were going to be a whole lot of children born this year, you know. But that didn't
mm-hmm.
happen. A lot of people got divorced, you know, I guess because they were shoved with their, you know, significant others, and they found out that it wasn't what they actually thought it was. So,
no.
I mean, it's crazy. So
yeah.
I guess there went the babies.
Right, there with the babies, because I was reading an article the other day. One of the other things I do, I've been tapped on the shoulder by different pastors in the community that want me to come in and talk about mental wellness and
mm-hmm.
mental illness. A couple of weeks ago, I did a Bible study on mental illness and what does it mean to us now today, and what does the Bible say about mental illness. And you'd be amazed at the different prophets of old that went through mental illness, wanted to commit suicide and different things like that. But taking it back to the pandemic, statistics really show that one of the highest percentage results of the pandemic is mental health. People, because of the ambiguity, because of the uncertainty of their lives and what's going to happen, because of the over 600, I think, and 20-some thousand people
yes.
who have died, and
yes.
the impact that it's had, not just to you or your family, but someone you know, either on your job, in your church, in your community, has been impacted by this pandemic, and it affects people differently. So
yes.
I really delve into the different people. There was like about 3.9% of adults age 18 and older that experienced serious psychological distress. Another 7.6% of children that's 12 years and older experience depression in any two-week period. Suicide is the second leading cause of death between people 10 to 34 years old. So
right.
it hit every – I'm a baby boomer. You know, I've told you my age already. But it's hit us too, even as an entrepreneur, as a small business owner. I had to rethink how I would do my business because people didn't want to come in the office anymore and sit face-to-face and talk because they were afraid that they would catch the virus.
Right.
So all of this plays mentally, and that's what I mean when I talk about the gloom and doom that's happening in the world. How do you address it? How do you respond to it?
Well, how
and
do
that's
you
who,
how do you explain why there are so many people that still won't take the vaccine?
Well, that's a discussion that I have every day, not only in my business, but in my family, because I am finding that the baby boomers, maybe some of the Gen X, that's between Gen X and baby boomers and things like that, they might have medical conditions that warrant them to have it.
Right.
To possibly get it, I should say, not have it, but to possibly get it. But the younger generation, my four boys that I mentioned, they are Gen X and millennials, and one of them and his wife, they got the vaccine, and they flying all over the place. The other ones, all kind of theories, Jenny, are going on out there. They want to wait and see. And I say,
right.
wait and see what? One of my sons said to me, And I was like, oh, my God, my mouth just dropped to the floor. He said, Ma, I'm not going to get it. I said, well, what is your reason? And I don't understand why you would not get it. And he says, well, I believe that, or I was told, or I saw something somewhere that said that if you get the vaccine and you take the vaccine, they're actually putting a chip into you so that they can track you. And I'm like, okay, maybe some people believe that. I'm not knocking it. But my comeback to him was, look, do you have a cell phone? And he said, yeah, Ma, you know I got a cell phone. I said, well, if you got a cell phone, you being tracked already.
That's the truth.
It's not about getting a shot and then putting chips on you. Where is your scientific data to say that that is really what's going on? So, but then I have sister-in-laws that's like around my age, at least in her 60s, and she hasn't taken it because they don't. The other excuse, Jenny, is I don't take flu shots from year to year. I don't take any other shots. Why should I start taking this shot? Well, it's a pandemic.
No, I'm laughing because
in your realm, in education, what kind of responses are you getting about why people don't want to take it?
Well, let me tell you this. I was just like your sister-in-law. I don't take flu vaccines. I haven't had a shot since I was a kid, you know, so I said I'm not taking it. But then I got children, but they took it. And you know what? They knew I wasn't going to get it, and they didn't pressure me. I thought that was interesting. Right. They didn't pressure me. But the thing that got me is just staying in the house all the time. I wanted to get out. You know, it was like I was locked up in here. So I went on and got it, but, you know.
You did?
I did.
Uh-huh. Good. Because you could see the impact, really, and I can't name all of, but the seven world systems was impacted by this pandemic. Spiritually, the church world, economically,
it
impacted it, educationally, with the schools being shut down and all of that. All of the different world systems that in place was impacted by this pandemic.
And I
don't know. I mean, I have faith in God. I believe God. And my saying is, Lord, your will and your way. So whether I take it or I don't take it, I'm still walking in faith and believing him to take care of me one way or the other.
Yes.
But, you know, everybody doesn't believe that way. And everyone is entitled to their own opinion.
That's true. Well, you know, you do what you do.
Right. You do what you do. So it's interesting for the mental illness. I really kind of talked about the signs because as a culture, as a black culture, our culture really puts a stigma around mental illness and going to therapy or getting a counselor or going to talk to someone about even thinking that you have a mental illness. They look at it as a taboo subject that you just don't discuss. And even being in the church world, they feel like, okay, you're supposed to have God, you're supposed to have the power, you're supposed to have all of this. You should not have a need to go. But we put Band-Aids on everything that happened in our lives, even the traumatic experience that we had in our childhood, whether it was rejection, abandonment, molestation, whatever happened, people respond to it differently, and they choose not to talk about it. They choose to hide it, but it's still affecting them because they have not allowed it to heal.
That's true.
You know, so no matter which way you look at it, yes, deliverance is needed. Help is needed. You need to talk to someone and realize that you're not alone. I'm looking at all of these celebrities that are coming out. Oh, what's her name? Taraji talking about mental illness, and there's quite a few more I've been following talking about they suffered with it for years, but they didn't want anybody to know with it because they you know, they're in the limelight and things like that. But it's an important subject and that needs to be delved into. So in
you know, with you having said that, I don't think it's bad that at times, I'm not saying all the time, but at times I think all of us come into situations where we need to just talk to someone else, you know, and try to, number one, get it off their chest. But a lot of times you just need to talk to someone.
Right.
You just need to talk to somebody, you know.
Yeah. Or you just need somebody to listen. One of my mottos when I first started out my business was listening to hear and address the unspoken. And that's because so many people would come to me and they really just wanted me to listen. And I really had to critique myself because listening is a skill. And you can find, I found myself, I can't talk about anybody else, so I'll talk about me. I found myself, especially in the corporate world sometimes, being in HR, I had to do conflict resolution and mediation between supervisors and employee issues and things like that. And they weren't listening to each other. And I wasn't listening either because are you listening to hear what a person is saying or are you listening to reply? And that is a deep, that's a deep thing right there. You could be talking to me right now, Jenny. I hear what you're saying, but I'm so busy. I'm far ahead of you. In my mind, I have jumped ahead to say, okay, how am I going to respond to her question? How am I going to get my point across? That's not listening.
That's true.
Listening is being quiet. Being quiet and listening to the person so much so that they can feel that you're concerned about them, that you're interested in what they're saying, and at the end of that period of listening, you're able to say, this is what I think I heard you say, and really summarize what the issues are and what's going on. And that's why I use the term listening to hear and address the unspoken, because there's so many things that are unspoken that people want to say, but they don't have someone who's really listening to them.
Now that's a really true statement.
Yeah, it is.
You can talk to somebody
all
day.
And I see that happen all over.
Yes, and
I'm
you
sorry,
can talk to
say?
Somebody. No, I was saying you could speak to somebody all day, and then you ask them, well, remember when I said so and so and so and so, and they say, huh? Did you say that?
Exactly.
Okay, Cynthia, we have a listener that wants to speak. Hi, listener. You're talking with Dr. Howard.
And how are you? And I'm enjoying Dr. Howard.
yes, so am I.
I can go on for days, it seems like. But, you know, Dr. Howard, one thing I wanted to bring into the point, people are still upset over this election. That election is draining people. It's tearing families up even now, the election itself. How come it's not solved? You think you got something solved and it's not. That's a big area that I found. A lot of parents argue with their children over it because the children see something altogether different. I know in my family, you know, it was a big issue also. And not only that, just everyday life has been so hard, especially since the pandemic hit the black coat the black people so hard, you know, and that's one big area, very big area about it. You know, a lot of our churches are still not open. They meet outside, they'll do this, but they are not opening, and especially for the elderly people, they don't want to really go back into the building. Maybe they'll support, but that's on their mind too. So it's one thing on top of the other piling up, keep piling up, 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 you know, and they're threatening the Social Security benefits. They're threatening this, Medicaid. When you turn on television, all they talk about is buy some insurance because you're going to die. Yeah, all this negative keeps hitting you. You know? I mean,
it's
I'm about to turn on the cartoons. Let me see what the cartoons, you know. But it's over and over and over and over again. I know we had to make some hard decisions. As far as my mother, we had to put her, and I believe the Lord's hand was in it, although I don't like it. We had to put her in the nursing home just before the pandemic hit. And it seemed like I was fighting over that. We didn't do that. And it seemed like it was the best thing. She's 90. She'll be 91 this year. But it seemed like that was the best thing for her. But, you know, then I had to clean out her. We had to clean out her apartment, and she found that out. Yeah, I cleaned out my apartment, you know, senior citizen. But she just wasn't able to take care of herself anymore. And that's a big issue. It's just one thing on top of the other that keeps on going and going and going. And then another thing, the justice system that we still have to deal with. I was just a 1 minute saying that he pointed out that since that decision with the George Floyd decision, that 385 people have been shot still by the police. When do we come to this is it? You know, you can't rest. You can't find peace that here, you know, like you're supposed to. And we've accomplished something. It's always something going on and on. You send your children to school, you wonder they're going to get sick or whatever. It just keeps going on and on and on. And the fact that we have a lot of single-parent households, they're trying to send the kids to school but then work or try to do this. But, you know, it's just everything just keeps going on and on and on.
And don't forget about the road rage that's going on. It's like people don't even want to leave the safety of their home to go run errands and things because people are literally in a hurry to go nowhere.
Yeah.
That's true. That is so true.
You know, they're in a hurry to go nowhere. And everything that you just mentioned, I don't know how to put it into words, but it seems like since the pandemic, and I'm not saying that these things haven't happened before the pandemic was even thought of or heard of.
Yeah.
But it seems like it used to be a time when you would have an issue, you would have a problem, whether it's with your family, with your spouse, you know, in the community, on your job, and you get through that problem and you'd be able to take a breather and say, oh, made it through that one before the next one comes. But nowadays, it's like it's like a fiery dart coming one after another.
One after the
another.
Other.
Like it's a continual testing that's going on, not just in your neighborhood, but in the world.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, the rumors of war and the social injustice, the terrorism, the sex trafficking. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. How do we handle it? It seems like it's an onslaught of which we've never had to deal with it before. And I think one of the key things you said is all of that stuff affected you. I'm going to be honest with you, and I do not like to get into politics or anything like that, but I know what I believe in things like that. I'll just say back before we elected this president and the other one was elected, I went into a deep depression. Because when I went to sleep that night, I just knew someone else was going to win. And when I woke up to hear that number 45 was in there, I was like, oh, my God. And when you go into a depression or feel anxiety about anything, you have to talk to yourself and speak to your mind more than anything before you decide whether you need to go get help or not of what can I do to offset it. And that's what I was getting ready to talk a little bit about. What are the signs that you could be depressed or that you need help or that you might be suicidal or that you just have anxiety? And those signs collaborate with what we went through in the pandemic. Sometimes there's a drawing away from your friends, family, and colleagues. Well, we were made to do that. We didn't have any choice but to draw away.
We avoid activities that we would normally enjoy. We couldn't go out and do it because of the pandemic. You know, there's a whole list of sleeping too much or too little, eating too much or too little. I'm not going to tell you how many pounds I gained during this pandemic.
Tell me about it. Up and down, up and down. I've had a romance with my refrigerator.
Now, here is the key one, feeling hopeless. And that's what we felt during this pandemic. We felt hopeless because we didn't know what the next day was going to bring. Not only the next day, the next second, minute, hour.
Right.
We didn't know what it was going to bring. Right. And so there's different things, the signs that can come up, being confused, having consistently low energy. I mean, I tell you, me working from home and having my blazer and a nice blouse on up top and my pajamas at the bottom, you know, doing
you're
all
doing
these,
that Zoom thing.
Yeah, I still have to talk to my clients some kind of way. You still have to live your life.
That's true.
You know, it's just so many things. And I think the key thing is, especially for the caller that called in, I really appreciate you listening in. But the key thing is communication. You got to talk about it. You cannot go on thinking that you are hopeless by yourself and that you're the only one that's going through it. You need support some kind of way or another.
Well, Dr. Howard, I think, I'm enjoying.
Thank you very much, Dr. Howard.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in, Lucy. I'm enjoying the show as well. And, you know, with all the things that you mentioned, you know, with the pandemic and everything, and, you know, violent crimes, murder and violent crimes is up, you know, around the nation. 2020 had the highest number of gun sales recorded.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, now, you know, these white people are up in arms about critical race theory, you know, the truth about our past being taught in schools and how they feel uncomfortable about it. I was just looking at a story where I think in Alabama, you know, Ruby Bridges, you know, had written a book, you know, about her story, you know, being a six-year-old kid integrating schools down south, and, you know, a white parent complained that it didn't have a happy ending, and it made her daughter feel uncomfortable. And so, you know, they're trying, you know, a lot of the states are trying to institute legislation that will prevent the truth about our history being told. And so it just seems like one thing after another, you know, and being black, it just seems like, you know, we're catching it from all ends now, you know, with the voter suppression laws, you know, they're trying to keep us from voting at the polls and making it harder for us to vote. You know, and then if you're raising children, you're trying to educate them to be aware of what's going on and how these things are affecting them. And so I think that people can be suffering from depression and not know they're depressed.
Right. You're absolutely right. I think one of the statistics says that, you know, depression really is normal. Because if you live in this life, based upon your journey in this life and the obstacles that you face, the struggles, the sicknesses, the illness, the joys, the highs, the mountaintop experience and the valley experiences, they talk about depression. And at any two-week period, you could be depressed. And I won't even put 2 weeks on it, but the study talks about the fact that it's not about being depressed. It's how long you stay in that state of depression.
All right.
If it goes on and on and on and you can't get out of it, you can't get yourself out of the bed, you don't want to talk to nobody, you don't want to eat, you don't want to sleep, you don't want to wash up. If somebody was to come walk in your house, they'd be running out the back door because they can't stand the stench of everything. But, you know, there's a certain level and mind set competency that comes in with anxiety and depression. And the amount of young people that feel that way that have reached out to me is just unbelievable. It's kind of like, I don't know how to put it into words, but it's kind of like the generation that's here now, and I know I'm opening a can of worms, but my boys are from a different generation than I am. My mother is from a different generation than I as a baby boomer. And when this generation that we're dealing with now, it's like they don't know how to deal with the hardships of life.
You're right about
the way the way that we did and came through. Tell my boys all together, buy a dog, name it Life, and say you have one. Figure it out. You know what I mean? I'll say, I got two words for y'all, and before I can finish it, they say, all of them say, Ma, I know, keep living. Because if you keep living, even though you have a five-year plan of what you're going to do, one of my sons had this 5 to 10-year plan about going to college. He went to a historically black college, and he was going to do this and that and the other, and I sat him down. I said, listen, son, I commend you for having this plan, and we should all have a plan for life. But never forget that during that plan that you have mapped out what's going to happen in this time period, the next time period, life is going to hit you.
That's true.
Life is going to happen. What are you going to do when that happens? And it does to all of us in some form or fashion.
That's so true.
Yeah, so things are going on simultaneously, and we have to comprehend it with what? Our brain, our mind. So how, it's not what happens to you, it's how do you respond to what happens to you.
That's it.
And a lot of people don't know how to respond. They're lost.
That's cool.
They're hopeless. They're walking in fear and bondage.
Now, let me ask you this. How do you propose, and this is just because I think it's important. I think everyone needs therapy at some point in their life, and maybe on a regular basis, to cope. Especially, men as well. I think men, we keep a lot of things to ourselves, and if we don't have a
female,
to share. I'm talking about men. I mean, I know women go, have issues as well. I'm just talking about from a male perspective, where we don't have as many support groups in a lot of instances, and we feel pressure as providers or just being black men, in society and afraid to get pulled over by the police,
something.
And so how would you, and I don't know that you have an answer, propose that we create a thinking of therapy being normal as opposed to a white person's thing or, a crazy person's thing? Something like that, so where we could probably get our kids involved in some therapy earlier to help them cope through life, and some adults as well. I don't know if you got the gist of that.
I really don't have, and I'm sorry, what's your first name again?
Maceo Coleman.
Maceo. Now, you know that makes people go.
Yeah. All right.
Oh my God! You should have said that from the get up, Maceo.
Yeah, I heard that.
I don't have an answer to that. And I think that as a black race, dealing with racism, dealing with what's been going on with police brutality, killing of our children, and things like that, we've had to do what? We've had to sit down. Well, thank God my kids are grown now. But even though they're grown, I still talk to them about don't go out there cutting the fool. You got to do a certain way and act a certain way because there's
there's still a fear of protection for your children.
That's
and so
it. Yeah,
in the beginning,
true.
Right. And so it's going to take, I always say, each one teach one. And the
mm-hmm.
things that God has given me wisdom and knowledge and understanding about, it's not for Cynthia. It's not for
all
Jenny.
Right.
It's not for Maceo. It's for you to share with others. So I believe.
That's cool. All right.
Yeah, I believe that it starts, number one, with us sharing our experiences. And we as a race don't do that very well. Everybody else share, save, do everything, go into business together and stuff like that. So it's got to be sharing. There's got to be education around it, especially
mm-hmm.
the stigma around going to a therapist. I have done some premarital counseling, too. I've been married. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, come August, me and my husband have been married for 30 years. And every time
right.
somebody asks him how long he's been married, he says he always double it. He says 60. you know, and so when you think about that in premarital counseling and things like that, men don't even want to go to counseling to save their marriage. They think that that's taboo.
Yeah.
So there's a lot
yeah.
of world views that we grew up with that we have to think about and know that even though mama told us that it should be this way, and I could even use the gay and lesbian. In Baltimore, my grandmother, I was raised in her house, and talking about someone being gay was taboo in the house. You didn't hear them talk
yeah.
about it. It was like, you know, and it took for me to be grown, Maceo, and go to a cookout somewhere where I was around them, didn't know nothing about it with my dumb tail self. I was
wow.
just having fun. And then found out after the fact, after I had mingled with them, after I had gotten to know them, and some of them
okay.
were doctors and lawyers and teachers and things like that. So I established a relationship and then found out that they was gay. That made me
all
say,
right.
well, why did my parents tell me not to be around these people, not to talk about it? It was taboo.
Mm.
And that is that stigma that you're talking about as far as men, it's taboo. You
yeah.
probably was raised thinking that's a weakness if I do that.
Yeah, men don't cry, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
so
I think that
the different movements that's going on now is because this, even though this generation may not have gone through the hard knocks that we have and don't know what to
right.
do, there's also a generation that don't take no stuff. They've been
that's
out there
it.
Marching
yeah, that's cool. You're
and,
right.
and protesting and doing things that
all right.
we wish we had it done.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
you know, they put some laws out in Florida and some other places where, you know, it's legal to run into a crowd of protesters now. You know,
oh,
you can run
wow.
people over.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you can run people over and, you know, and not catch a case behind it. Yeah, and some
mm-hmm.
people have done it. You know, so we are dealing with, and today we are dealing with things that our parents and grandparents had dealt with, you know, Jim Crow and pre-Jim Crow, I believe, you know, where they're trying to repeal and roll back the voting rights and, you know, really, like they said, authoritarianism, you know, where, you know, in elections, even if you win, you're going to lose because they're putting people in
yeah.
place that can change, you know, change the votes. And it's amazing. And, I mean, some people could just be so shocked they just sit back and don't do anything. That's like, you know, with the president, it seems like, you know, well, the White House, it seems like there's not really an urgency, you know, for them with this, you know, to pass this voters bill.
The gun.
That, you know, these
not,
no,
not
no, no,
even
I'm
with the
about,
guns, Maceo. They haven't done
yeah.
anything
well,
about these guns.
Well, I'm
yep.
not even talking
and
about
let's not forget that. Let's not forget about the whole political system, and that whole having to have a certain percentage vote and the Republicans being against the Democrats and don't want to put anything in place that was in there by Obama. And you know, it's like a tit-for-tat that's going on, but the people in the world or in the United States is suffering.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, can you tell me, Cynthia?
But the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But, Cynthia, can you explain to me why they have such a love for Donald Trump?
But you say you don't like to talk about politics,
Right, because I know that there are Trump lovers out there. Let's just set the record straight. I am not one of them, but I agree that we should, can't we all just get along and we can agree to disagree. I believe, and I don't even know if I should say this, but Maceo then opened up a can of worms. And no wonder you didn't want to tell me the first name.
All right,
well, that's why I'm on the podcast.
I believe
some controversy.
That, but I believe that in this world, there's a lot of things that were laid dormant that was going on that we knew that was going on. Like you
that's
said, the Bible said there's nothing new under the sun.
Under the sun.
From generation to generation, things have been happening, and especially when it comes to race relations, the Ku Klux Klan and different things like that, how people really feel. And I believe that number 45, when he was in office, and the way he ran office, the way he said things, the way he got away with things, the way that he felt like he could do no harm and whatever he could do, opened up a can of worms for those people who really didn't tell us that they felt that way. Now we got to look at who we sitting next to on the bus, who we work with at work, who we sitting next to in church and stuff like that. You think you know somebody, but you really don't. And I think the can of worms have been opened up for them to say, well, our president does it. So it's a trickle-down effect is what I call it. Me and my prayer partners talk about it a lot. That trickle-down effect, it starts from the top, and it opens all kind of windows. And I don't want to go into the spiritual side, but in addition to heavenly spirits and things like that, there are demonic spirits as well, too.
Okay,
and everybody don't believe in them, but I do, and I've had experiences with them. And so I believe that they have been leashed because of the actions of some
people.
Right. And so now they were like, oh, I ain't got to, I don't have to be, I don't know, a redneck and hide it anymore. I can just be blatant with it. I'm entitled.
Yeah.
I'm entitled.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And how do we address that? That's a big, broad question. But to Maceo's point, I think that we can't just sit back and do nothing. We have to, in some way, look at it and do our part, whether it's supporting one of
the
groups, Black Lives Matter, or supporting, just like the lady that was on the news this week. I can't think of her name. She's in academia. What's the school that she was at?
Oh, Nicole Hannah Jones.
Yes, North Carolina.
What's the 1619 project?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes, and had the experience and the everything that was needed for them to give her tenure. But
isn't that something how they treated her?
Yeah,
that was really
something. But my point is this. After thinking about it, and they came back at the 11th hour when they were forced to make a decision and wanted to offer her tenure, and she turned it down and went to Howard University. And she did it, she said, because she was tired of being in a system that was not made for her to advance.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to teach them how to treat us. She would rather go to an organization that already know.
I know.
Yeah.
That, right?
Yeah.
You know, and people talked against her for doing that. They felt like she should have stayed there and kept on plugging. We've been plugging for how many hundreds of years now?
Those are the people that wouldn't do it anyway either. They would have been gone. Yeah. But,
so, I mean,
she got a good one, Howard.
Yes. You got a good one.
Well, you know.
And when I was in the corporate world, I did a whole lot of recruiting for United Technologies at all levels, undergraduate, graduate level, MBA,
okay.
executives and things like that. And I went to on a business trip to Howard University. Even though I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, I had never been on the campus of Howard. And when I saw where Howard was in the inner city, I was just shocked. I was shocked. But when I got in there and started talking to them young people, they were sharp as a tack.
All right.
You know, all the historically black colleges. And when I look at my boys, my four boys, I think – well, first of all, three out of the four went to college, and from those three, two of them went to historically black college, and one
okay.
did not. You know, and you could tell the difference, but I always talk to them, and I always try to lead by example, so they always try to keep up with me. Not one of them got a doctorate.
All right.
You know, I got to show them.
I know that was.
What to do. But I say that just kidding and joking because, to me, laughter doeth good like a medicine, even when
That's
you're
true.
Talking about important issues, because what does getting mad and upset do for you? You should be trying to work together with whoever you can work with to make a change. And that's what I did in the corporate world. A lot of times I was the only black woman in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I supported a lot of executives, but I didn't see too many executives that looked like me. But I learned a lot of things. And as a result, I used to always kid my husband and kids and tell them, I don't know how long I'm going to be in here because they're going to get rid of me because everything I'm learning, I'm going to let my brothers and sisters know.
Oh, yeah.
I know that's right.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and so it's I can't answer that question. I should throw it back on you. What you going to do?
Well, I mean, that, man, and I'm glad you did. I mean, you know, I mentor with an organization here, Midnight Golf Program. That's the name of the program, and it works with high school seniors, 250 seniors every year. You know, we've been dealing with COVID the past two sessions. You know, and so and we in spring break we take the students to a college road trip. So you know, we charter about six buses. And these are majority, I mean, out of 250, 248 of them black, you know, these are all black students, half male, half female. And we take them down south to different schools, some HBCUs, you know, and others, you know, Vanderbilt, you know. So, you know, we go all over the place, you know, University of Louisville, you know. But I'll tell you one story of, it was probably my, and I've been volunteering for 4 years, probably my second year. I mean, I'm so impressed by this organization, you know. It's like, wow, you know, retired social worker started it, you know, with Nate Fluker.
Right.
And so, you know, we pulled up to a hotel, and I mean, everything's first class. I mean, everything. So, you know, we showing these students, you know, right out the gate, everything that, you know, we're doing is first class. The restaurants we're going to is first class. And then we go to, you know, we play golf 2 days in a row while we're down there, at these beautiful courses. So we pulled up to this hotel one night about 10 o'clock. I mean, it's been a long day. Everybody's tired, you know. These six buses, you know, six Indian Trail buses. And so, you know, with the hardwood floors. So, you know, you see these white people, you know, about six white people out in front of a hotel playing cornhole, you know, throwing a little bean bags in a hole, you know, a couple of them drinking, you know, a couple of white ladies out there. So they see these buses pull up and, you know, they just stop and, you know, start looking. Now, you know, they probably think it's a sports team or something. You know, they don't know what's going on. So when we were the first bus, so when they turned the lights on the bus, and when they turn the lights off, all you see is black people. You know, I saw the demeanor change, right? I saw the demeanor change. Now, This one guy looked like a redneck, you know, he's sitting there with his hands folded, and I look like he got an attitude. So, you know, everybody's tired. So everybody gets off the bus. All the young men grab the luggage off the bus. You know, some people go straight to the hotel. You know, some of the mentors go in to get the keys to the rooms and all that. You know, everybody's tired. So, hey, you know, ain't nobody paying attention to these people. But I'm looking at them because it's my responsibility to protect these kids, you know, while
right.
we're here. It's protect everybody, you know. So I'm looking. And it was like, you know, he almost didn't want to move, you know, out the way. And, you know, one of the ladies kind of looked like she clutched her pearls, you know, like, oh, my God. And so, but we got a white mentor.
I got a visual going on right now.
Right.
Yeah. We got a white mentor, older guy, you know. So evidently he saw this, too. You know, he peeked this, too. So he walked up to the guy that, you know, looked like he was the grand wizard, you know, and started talking to him, you know. Right. Started talking to him. And so, you know, after that, you know, Colin went on about his business. And they seemed to be a little more relaxed at that point. So, you know, once everybody got the luggage off, you know, grabbed their luggage and start, you know, going inside the hotel, you know, I was out there. And so, you know, started talking with the guy. And he was like, well, you know, is this a sports team or something? Like, no, you know, it's a mentoring program, you know, we're on a college tour, but, you know, everybody plays golf. So that kind of rung a bell with him, you know, he was a golfer, you know. So, Willie? Oh, the girls too? Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody plays golf, you know. So he was like, oh, he was all in at that point. But it was just the fact that being down south with all these black students going into these white spaces, you know, and seeing how mannerable they are, and us, you know, reinforcing and, you know, reminding them, hey, you know, we out of town, make sure you're on your best behavior, you know, in your room at a certain time and all that. So it's so organized, but it's just the initial response and, you know, from the people, especially when we go to the mall. You know, you see 200
right.
kids running through the mall, you know, security coming out of the woodworks.
Yeah.
They about to clean us out, about to shoplift, you know, but.
What?
Yeah, you know, so it's just amazing, you know, but we do have some tea time where we come up with a number of topics and we talk to the group, and some of the kids are so vulnerable and transparent with what they talk about and what they say in regards to their life. It's been so therapeutic for me, you know, to be
right.
a little more open
right.
with myself, it being a private person. And that's so liberating
right.
and freeing. Right. Yeah, so I just thought I'd share that. But that's one of the things that I'm doing, you know.
Right.
I've got something
and so
else that
I
I'm
bet
working
you,
on.
So that's one of many things that you're doing. I know in talking with Jenny before I had this opportunity to come on the podcast, that she's doing a lot educationally and with her book and having a goal of
yes.
touching all 50 states and things like that. I have I am the president of the College Assistant Ministry, and we do training around life after high school, what they have to do to
okay.
prepare for college in their freshman year in high school, sophomore, junior, and senior, and all about financial aid and things like that.
Very good.
I just right. was appointed to the board of directors for Hartford City Mission, and that's to really look at the children in the north end of Hartford, which is typically, they would say, a bad area, but disciple them around different things, after-school programs that would enhance mentoring and exposing them to different things like that. So I'm saying all of this to say we each have something that we're doing. But
yeah.
in addition to doing it, we have to support each other.
That's true.
That's true.
And doing
That's
it.
True.
A lot of times people just out doing stuff and you don't even know about it. You
right.
don't support. You don't share. You don't collaborate. You know, to see how what I'm doing and what you're doing, how we can impact more of the masses out there or more
Every
of
man
the
for
children.
Himself, right.
Right, right.
So it's when we really start talking about it, like we've been doing tonight, it's a whole lot that we could be doing, but that we need to be strategic about doing.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
You know, I was even thinking to the point of where we need to be training our students, you know, training them up to be politicians, you know, training them to put them in certain positions where they'll, you know, be able to make policy, where they'll be able to be influential in certain areas that we're, like you say, you know, and some, in a lot of instances, you were the only black person there, you know.
Right.
In those places, you know. And in a lot of instances, I'm the only black person, you know, and I'm a tall, bald-headed black man, you know. But it's gotten to the point where a lot of times I don't even realize it until I do, you know.
Right.
It's like, yeah. Oh, no, only one. You know, and then sometimes when you got other black people there, they want to act like they don't see you, you know. Like,
mm-hmm.
I want to be the favorite Negro. I want to be the favorite Negro.
Okay, we got another
They can't
listener.
Help but see you, right?
They can't help but see me, you know.
Okay.
That's how my husband is. My husband is 6'5". And,
okay. Woo!
Yeah, he's 6'5". And that's another whole different discussion right there. How black men are perceived because of their height and a big man dingo, they expect you to do this and do that and do the other. I listen to him and we have some interesting conversations about that and what he
experiences. Lucy.
Oh, God. So
did you
anyway.
Have a question? Did you have a question?
Okay.
Miss Lucy.
Oh, you got a caller?
Oh, yes, yeah. I wanted to ask the doctor, if you don't mind. Does she know of any teenage psychologists in the Detroit area that can help with special ed children? Does she know of any at all?
I don't in the Detroit area, but what I would suggest is you maybe ask Jenny that question. I know here in Connecticut we have a website that you can go to look for psychologists, psychotherapists, clinical technicians, therapists, counselors, where they put their name in the list and you can reach out to see which ones is in the area. Now, I'm assuming they have one of those in Michigan, but I don't know for sure.
Okay, thank you so much, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Lucy?
Uh-huh.
Did you get your answer?
Yeah, she told me to check with you.
Oh, okay.
I'm thankful, yeah.
Yeah, I was explaining that here in Connecticut, there's a, I think it's called Psychology Today site. It's a website that you can go to, and it lists everybody in the Connecticut area, not just in Bloomfield, but down in Stratford, Bridgeport, all of the different towns across Connecticut of those type people in your area. And you could actually, they put their information out there so you can contact them. And I don't know, Jenny, do you know if they have something like that in Michigan?
No, I'm not. I'll have to look
that up.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get together.
We'll talk about it.
Okay.
I have another person that has a question or make a comment. Hi, listener. Your name is where you're calling from.
You can call me Joe instead of Mister.
Okay.
Joe.
Okay, Joe.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I saw the headline, so I wanted to find out when I saw, do you feel physically, do you feel unsafe or mistreated at times? Is that involving situations where a person may feel physically unsafe or physically mistreated or psychologically unsafe or psychologically mistreated?
Well, that's
that's basically dealing with psychological. I really don't get into that much with domestic violence or somebody being treated that way, although I do, I am knowledgeable about the hotlines to refer them to, and I have other entrepreneur colleagues that focus, like, on suicide and domestic violence and things like that that I can refer them to. But my business is more from my doctorate in Christian counseling. A lot of people, you'd be surprised, want a black psychologist versus, you know, any other ethnicity, and they're looking for someone who can talk to them about Bible-based foundational things concerning what they're going through. And a lot of my colleagues tell me that, you know, they get certified through the state of Connecticut to do clinical services and things like that, and part of the certification is they can't talk a lot about God and different things like that, where in my business, I'm certified, but I'm not certified through the state of Connecticut. I'm certified through the Communion with God Leadership Network, which allows me to do that. So some people are looking and yearning for that, and that's what I deal with mostly. To give you an idea, Joe, I have had clients that needs to deal with anger management. I've done a little premarital counseling. I've had a client who was molested as a child and is a grown woman now and really just wants the love of her mother, but the person that molested her is the mother's boyfriend, and she's trying to work through that. So it's usually things like that that has to deal with abandonment, rejection, you know, not feeling any peace, not knowing which way to turn and things like that. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. As well as from my professional background, I have 40 years of experience in HR, so I do HR consulting as well.
Okay, so to boil it all down, your particular niche would be the black community who would feel very comfortable dealing with a black psychologist whose specialty would be Christian healing or healing through the Bible.
Well, yes, I have to say that that's why I talk about the four C's. I do coaching, I do consulting, I do mentoring, and I do counseling, and I do it with everybody from all walks of life and all different ethnicities. So it's not just focusing on that. I'm just making the comment that people sometimes come to me before that. I have a person that called me and said, I did a search out on the Internet and on social media for a black therapist, and your name came up. Now, that doesn't mean that that's the only person that I deal with are blacks. No, that is definitely not the case.
Oh, okay. But you would say that maybe your particular niche or forte would be from people who are looking to speak to counselors or coaches or therapists who are of their own ethnicity, can relate to their particular background and life's experiences, and also want to have, I guess, an association with God.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I see. All right. I just wanted to call in to find out if, you know, if you're going, if anybody's going to deal with the anxiety of living, you know, just if you leave your house, you know.
Just living, huh?
Oh, my God.
That's for another show, Joe.
Oh,
okay.
My God. That's
a book title.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That would comprise like 15 shows, wouldn't it? Because so many people are feeling anxious today. All right.
Yeah.
Well, appreciate you calling in, Joe.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
Yeah,
take
sure.
care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye. Okay, Miss Lucy, did you get all the information you needed?
Yes, I did.
Okay, all right.
Yes, I did.
You know,
thank you,
Dr. Howard, I don't know what to say about you. I really did. Honestly, I have. This is really, it has been a great show. You can come on my show anytime. Anytime.
Oh, thank you. Do you realize that this is, did you realize, Jenny, that this is the first podcast show I've done?
No, but you've done great.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely won't be the last.
Now, is that Miss Lucy?
That's Lucy.
And now,
I know Miss Lucy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, listen.
And you know, you learn things and you share things. Can I just say to Maceo, I think it was Maceo that was talking about, or was it you, Jenny? I think it was Maceo that was talking about the different things that's going on in the world. And I don't know if it was his mother or someone that's 90 or 91 years old.
No.
Excuse me. Maceo is my son.
That's the first time in 4 years that information has been divulged.
Well, I was going to
she must really like you.
Look, I knew it was going to come out. I knew it was going to come out because I'm listening to hear and address the unspoken. That unspoken was that Maceo is your son.
Well, there you
no,
go.
I just wanted to say that, talk about anxieties and Joe's question about the anxieties of life. It still goes back to how do you respond to it. Now, this pandemic, my mother is the youngest of three sisters, and we were born and raised in Baltimore, like I told you guys. And so now everybody has gone their separate ways, but my oldest aunt, my mother's oldest sister, her name is Helen, and she's in Baltimore, and she's the only one that stayed there. We are all over in different states now. But she is 97 years old. And at some point, and that's another whole subject of being a power of attorney for someone, because I never knew how much work was involved with it.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But a long story short, last year she contracted the COVID, and I'm trying to handle her business from Connecticut. She's in Baltimore. And I've been handling getting her into assisted living and different things like that. But she contracted COVID, had to go to the hospital. The hospital took care of her medically, and when she was okay medically, they was like, Cynthia, you got to find some place for her to go, because they would not let her come back to her assisted living home unless she was COVID-free.
Oh, okay.
So I had to go through making phone calls, talking to people, getting information about where she can go, what rehab center. She ended up going to a rehab center in West Baltimore that had a COVID unit there. I had to face call Duo, talk to her over the phone. 96, she was 96 at the time. She turned 97 this February. But she is COVID-free and back at the assisted living. And I told her, I'm the power of attorney, but Lord, it seems like this lady gonna outlive us all. I just don't know. So the anxieties of life, either you fall apart and you crack up and you don't know what to do and you realize that you need help, or your response is that of faith and believing God and still calling to get help, because you've never done this before and you don't know what to do. So we all have experience with different things, and we don't know what the next person is going through.
That's true.
That's so true.
That's true.
We really don't. We really don't.
I work in hospice, so I see the scenario that you just described on a regular basis, you know, with families, children and guardians and power of attorneys, you know, that are dealing with situations like that for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be overwhelming. And then there's those that have their 97-year-old aunt staying with them in their homes.
Yeah.
So, you know, and being a caregiver is a whole nother topic, a whole nother show.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a whole nother show. And I know a lot of friends who are caregivers. And so what I find myself doing is sharing my story and what I went through and examples of what agencies you can call and get help and things like that. Each one teach one.
That's it.
Yeah, that's cool. We need support groups for that.
Yeah.
You know, but that's just like, you know, family members sharing family history, you know.
Yes.
So that, you know, as you grow older, you'll know, you know, grandpa had diabetes, you know, cancer runs in the family, or, you know, at a certain age, you can expect this to happen to your body as opposed to, you know, something just happening and you just thinking it's you, you know, or, you know, not knowing that it's normal. So I think that, you know, the sharing of information, you know, in families, and not only in families, but amongst, you know, women, you know, groups telling younger women, or, you know, men's groups telling younger men what they expect as they get older.
That's it. Yeah.
So when they get there, it's not such a big surprise.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree with that.
Other than Maceo, I have to say, though, and Jenny, is that I told y'all my age at the beginning of the podcast, the 68, and this aging process is no joke. I tease my husband. I say, I have two awakenings every morning. First, I wake up and I thank God that I've lived to see another day,
and then
my body wakes up. And then my body wakes up. I was like, I don't remember this pain in my knee last night, but it's here this morning. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
but I'm not complaining. I'm just explaining.
That's right. Me too. I'm so glad to be opening my eyes.
Yeah. It's a blessing.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Cynthia,
so
I have enjoyed you. Go ahead, man.
Thank you. I enjoyed both of you. And Miss Lucy and Joe and the callers and everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm so glad you spent the time with us this Friday. No,
yeah.
I was just going to say, Dr. Howard, you know, I'm glad you came and shared with us and gave us some insight into, you know, what you do and how you do it and some things that we could be doing as a community, you know, and as individuals to not only seek out therapy for ourselves, for our own mental well-being, you know, because everybody, you know, like Joe said, you know, the anxiety of living, you know, living in itself is stressful. It can be, you know, but like you say, you know, I tell my kids, you know, life is 10% of what happens to you, and, you know, 90% is how you deal with it.
Yes,
you
exactly.
Know, your perception
exactly.
of
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I am honored and so thankful to you and to God for this opportunity. I hope I have said something that would tell you where my heart is and that would help you and the audience. And I hope you invite me back again.
Oh, most definitely. And I've learned just sitting here listening to you. So I have really enjoyed you. And I'm telling you, you can ask Maceo. I don't invite a whole bunch of people back. But you are welcome anytime. You can just call and say, hey, Jenny, I got something I want to talk to your people about. It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay.
Alrighty then.
Maceo or Lucy, you want to have a last say, Miss Lucy? Maybe she's gone already. Okay, Mace, what did you want
to
say?
Well, I'd just like to say it's a good Friday. You know, it's a day that we've never seen before and we'll never see again, you know. Glad to be here. You know,
really talked about some good information as far as mental health is concerned. And, you know, not only from, you know, our children, but adults as well. I think we all need some therapy. For those that are spiritual, you know, having it based in spiritual, you know, teaching is great as well. So I think that it's something as a community we need to emphasize more and make it something that's in schools where we have school. And, you know, I never looked at my counselor as a therapist, you know, actually far from. And, you know, and so what I may have needed during my teen years didn't come from him, you know, but I can see counselors acting in that capacity if they are, you know, so trained or, you know, have the capacity to do that. But I think that's something that we need more of in our community. So, you know, great show, Dr. Howard. Great show, Jenny White. Thank you.
Okay. And Dr. Howard, did you want to leave us with something?
What do you mean as far as information and my contact information or just with my thoughts about the podcast?
Well,
okay.
You got 60 seconds.
I got it. Okay. I got 60 seconds. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for this opportunity to share my heart with you this evening on Let's Talk About It with Jenny White. I appreciate it. And now I'm going to have to add a little thing and say, Let's Talk About It with Jenny White and Maceo. So I thank and praise God for the opportunity. My contact information is my website is www.chconsultme.com. I can always be reached. You can find out information about what I do, why I do what I do, if you didn't get a clear picture tonight. And I just thank God for this opportunity. I don't know if it's proper to do this, but I'd like to close out by just saying a word of prayer. I thank you, Father God, for this opportunity. I thank you for the door that has opened. I thank you for your goodness, your kindness, your mercy. Thank you for the plethora of topics that we hit on tonight. And thank you for your wisdom, knowledge, and understanding and how to answer it and how to address it. Thank you for Maceo. Thank you for Jenny. Thank you for Miss Lucy. Thank you for Joe, all of those that called in or maybe called in but didn't want to say anything. Ask that you would continue to bless this podcast, God. Ask that I decree and declare that it will be spirit-filled and go to the world, and all of the goals and strategies behind it will be accomplished. In the matchless and priceless name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you. So what I'd like to leave you guys with is never be afraid to try something new. Remember, amateurs built the Ark. Professionals built the Titanic. Okay.
I love it.
And with I will say good night all, and thank you for tuning in to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. Good night. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You too. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.